Hello everybody and welcome to Life from the Underworld. Today we're extremely overwhelmed to meet a fictional interview with the greatest conqueror ever, Alexander the Great. During his leadership from 336 to 323 BC, Alexander the Great conquered the Greek city-states, the Persian Empire, and founded more than 70 cities, creating an empire that stretched across three continents and covered about 3 million square miles. Alexander the Great, from 356 to 324, left Macedonia in 334 BC at the age of 21 with 43,000 foot soldiers and 6,000 horsemen. He would never return home again. Alexander was the greatest established in Greek culture and created in the Hellenistic world. After his death, Alexander's empire was divided up into kingdoms ruled by his generals. We are so excited to welcome him for an imaginary interview from the underworld, he's one of the most fascinating real heroes from our past. Thank you, Your Majesty, to accept this fictional interview. What an amazing destiny you had. From your kingdom of Macedonia, you built an empire. You're considered to be one of history's most successful military commanders. But weren't you yourself the heir of the great king? Yes, I inherited the throne of Macedonia at the age of 20. My father, King Philip, had already transformed Macedonia into a powerful and centralized monarchy. He also had reunited under his leadership all the major Greek cities, except Sparta, in a military union named the Corinth League, with the common objective to invade the Persian Empire in retaliation for their past invasions. The enemies of my father were delighted to deal with me, a 20-year-old boy, but they very quickly understood that they were wrong about me. After sacking the city of Thebes, they all got perfectly my message. I was immediately given the generalship of Greece. Scholars and historians have been fighting over the assassination of your father, Philip, who recently married a young woman of noble Macedonian family. There was rumours that you and especially your mother, Olympias, were fearing the eventual birth of a male heir who might have been a contender to the throne. Are you seriously asking me if I murdered my father? That is quite bold. You are lucky that I value bravery. So the answer is no, not at all. It is just nonsense. My father had very carefully prepared me for a succession since my birth. He monitored my education and sent for the most celebrated teacher in Greece, the famous Aristotle, also a Macedonian, to teach me. The day that I tamed the Indopomor Bucephalus was the most magnificent but also the most ferocious horse he had ever seen, because I noticed that he was frightened of his own shadow. That day, when I was 10, he decided that I was his true heir. He wasn't known to change his mind. At his age, he knew he would not be able to prepare properly another heir. My father was pragmatic, so I have never doubted that I was going to succeed him. Now you need to understand that my mother, Olympias, was an outstanding woman. She was extremely educated, proud, and was fearless. I don't know and don't want to know about her relationship with my father. It was their own business. So in 333 BCE, you launched your father's Panhellenic conquest. You had the leadership of all the Greek armies. You crossed with your armies the Hellespont and invaded the mighty Achaemenid Empire in all your battles. You were never defeated. How so? What, in your opinion, explains this almost divine invincibility? Well, do you remember that I am the only one who was able to unravel the knot made by Gordius in a creative but efficient way? The prophecy was true. Of course, it even became an expression that we still use today, referring you to cut the Gordian knot, meaning now to solve in a creative manner an extremely difficult, complicated, intricate problem. In 333 BC, while marching through Anatolia, modern-day Turkey, you arrived in the city of Gordium, where the founder, Gordius, king of Phrygia, had tied hundreds of years ago a knot so complicated that he had given the prophecy that whoever would unravel this knot would rule over the whole of Asia. Many had tried without success, until you, who after struggling with the complex knot, lost patience, thought outside of the box, and with one stroke of your sword, sliced through the knot. After that, you officially went to conquer Asia, fulfilling the prophecy. This is the episode of how you solved the problem of the Gordian knot is so telling about your unique personality. Still, in the terrible battles that you had to fight, what do you think made you invincible? I was only 20, but as I've already explained to you, my father had made sure I was extremely well prepared. Having learned all about strategy and the art of war, I had the support of my very experienced father's generals, and also my own age generals, my mates, my schoolmates. When centuries later, your Prime Minister Lord Wellington notoriously said that the Battle of Waterloo had been won on the playing field of Eton, people understood that it was because of the rules in public schools. Not really. It's more due to the friendship, the bonds that you've created with your schoolmates. My wise father had created a kind of boarding school for myself and the children of Macedonian nobles, like Ptolemy, Hephion, and Cassandra. We grew up together, we were true friends, and they were my companions. We were educated together by the great Aristotle on his battlefield. Even miles apart, we could work like one man, as we all knew so perfectly each other. During centuries, royal battles have been studied, even dissected, to try to find out the recipes for military success. According to scholars, historians, and military experts, you based your strategies on five principles. Well, I'm most certainly curious. Go on. According to the experts, you would divide your armies into several columns. Attack and never wait and be defensive. Surprise the enemy either by the suddenness of the attack or the origin of the charge. Coordinate the cavalry with infantry. Try to overwhelm the enemy laterally. Not a bad analysis, but these principles are not enough to win against experienced armies. There is so much more. First, as Aristotle taught us, observe the terrain and use it. It's a key element. Then you adapt accordingly, your phalanx and your cavalry tactics. And you need, of course, fierce loyalty of your troops. I have never lost a battle, despite being the most of the time outnumbered. I led the cavalry charges myself, wearing usually an easy-to-spot white-plumed helmet. I have suffered severe sword, lance, arrow, knife wounds. I always told my soldiers that there is no part of my body which is not a scar, and for all your sakes, for your glory and your gain, my men knew that I was enduring the same hardships that any of them during a campaign. They knew that I was the first into the battle. It is so impressive to think that you have never lost a battle in all your life, especially as you were the first into the battle. All the enemies must have targeted you as you were wearing a white plumed helmet, making you an easy target. What now you call luck, we call protected by the gods. I felt blessed by the gods to always survive. I was obviously fulfilling a divine mission. Why the arrow passed over my head when I was leaning, why the horse of an enemy stumbled, enabling me to kill him. I felt invincible and specially blessed by the gods. I felt a special connection with Achilles, the hero described by Homer. Aristotle had given me his annotated book of the Iliad. It had never left my side. It is true that because of his incredible invincibility, I developed a belief in my own divine heritage, which my mother had always believed in. And this caused a problem with my troops, as Macedonians rejected this idea. However, I continued to insist on my divinity, even casting a godlike image on myself on coins. I was the first mortal to dare it. It is also amazing that you kept your army supplied by recruiting from the enemy. The fact that you could successfully do this speaks volumes about your leadership. I just don't understand the generals who want to lead their armies into the safety of their headquarters. I sincerely don't get it. I loved my men. I would never have asked them something that I could not have done myself, and they knew that. I was untouched by the wounds and the pain of my soldiers. After a battle, I would visit them, examine their wounds, talk to our physicians, listen to their stories. More importantly, I would make sure that they understood how their actions had been vital to our victory, that all their actions, their wounds, had been so meaningful for us. Not many generals or leaders are known to do that. I had a good tutor named Aristotle, who had warned me that before beginning as a leader, I had to learn to serve. I never forgot that lesson. I was always able to put myself into the shoes of my soldiers. I understood them. You fulfilled the dream of your father by conquering the entire Persian Empire, overthrowing King Darius III. Your empire stretched from Greece to the Indus River, but you had to turn your back because of your homesick armies. Yes, it had already been almost a decade that we had left Macedonia and Greece, our homes, our families. I was ready to continue this conquest, to discover new people, new cultures, to feel the frenzy of a new battle. They refused. I understood that I had been requesting too much of them, so we turned back. But something had been broken into me. I wanted so eagerly to reach the ends of the world and the great outer sea. When we arrived in Persia, I sent out most of my veterans home with riches and honours. I died soon after in 323 in Babylon of a supposed fever. Your tomb has still not been found despite numerous expeditions. Once you are deceased or poisoned, your mother and your wife Roxanne and your son Alexander, born after your death, were killed by your generals. It is indeed a sad story for such a great conqueror. I died from a fever or from poison. I don't know. At the age of 32, while my wife Roxanne was pregnant, it is true that I have been careless and not given enough thought to my succession. It was a grave and terrible mistake. After my death, my empire collapsed. My family was killed. My generals fought amongst themselves for greed. What a bitter outcome. But your story, your legacy, and your influence is immense and has inspired so many throughout the centuries. You have become as legendary as Achilles. You have spread the Greek culture in the whole Hellenistic world, which will develop into our modern Western civilization. But amazingly for your time, you have also tried to mix the different population by marriages. Did you want to create a multicultural society? Yes, that was my plan. I believe that we needed to learn from each other to become better and stronger. I married Roxana, a Persian princess, and I made many of my soldiers marry Persian women in order to mix them and avoid the conqueror's rules, where the winners impose their rules to the foreign nation and therefore develop hostility towards the alien conquerors. We had a lot to learn from the Persians and from different nations we came across. That was a revolutionary concept to imagine and create a multicultural society. It was so innovative that more than 2,000 years were needed to arrive to the same conclusion that you had. We need to mix and learn from each other. Your legacy is immense, and today we will still admire you, Alexander the Great. Thank you so much for this incredible and amazing fictional interview. And remember, dear audience, that there is more to come on our podcast. Next week, we will bide our farewell to our great heroes or our beloved from beloved ancient Greece. So more to come. Meanwhile, stay safe and stay tuned.